in the Yeshivas Hakdoshas that goes back to time immemorial is to learn Torah B'Iyun, to delve and to try to understand whether it's a Pasuk in Chumash, or it's the Gemara in Kedushin, or Bava Basra, or it's Hilchos Isser V'Heter. That's a Mesorah that goes back for a very long time. But the truth is, it's hard to understand the Mesorah. Particularly, one could argue, in our generation, where young men are starting to learn, in many American situations, are starting to learn Torah a little bit when they're a little older, unfortunately, that the curriculum of the yeshiva really doesn't make a lot of sense. Why is it that we're going to be learning a few dapim b'iyun, stopping at why Rashi says it this way, why Tosfos says it this way, how's the Rajba a little bit different than Tosfos, why did Ravina Ravashi say it like this, why did Rashi add that extra word? And Baruch Hashem, we're spending so much time on that. I'd like to suggest a different curriculum that in many ways would be much more effective in creating Jewish proficiency. And that would be, we don't learn B'Iyun. We cover ground. One takes out a good translation, an art scroll. One, in the amount of time, Mirtzeh Hashem, that you'll spend, let's say you'll start learning B'Iyun and Mirtzeh Hashem halfway through Shana Aleph, the Siyata D'Shmaya. And then, in a few years in yeshiva in America, if you have to go back to America, I hope you don't have to, and then you continue on for another 5 years, that amount of time could have been used to go through, superficially, seeing what's all of Shas, going through and reading basic, concise summaries of halacha, and instead we have this tradition that morning Seder and night Seder is devoted to trying to understand the Gemara that we're learning with our Rebbeim, and trying to understand every word and to understand, not just what our Rebbeim said, that I said from their Rebbeim. In many ways, young men will come out more proficient in the other system. Now, of course, one needs to do the other system as well. In other words, one needs to aspire for Yediyas HaTorah. But why is it that we have such a strong tradition this way? To answer this question, I want to share with you a story that has nothing to do with learning Iyun and learning Bikiyas, and will become a mashal for the message that I want to share with you from Meiri V'Rabbi Rav Nevensal, who was talking about Chanukah. He wasn't talking about, although I know he agrees with this as well, even though he's one of the greatest Bikiyim in the world. A story that could serve as a mashal, as a context in which we're going to elaborate on the value of Iyun. It's a story that's not in the storybooks because it has a component to it that is slightly sacrilegious. And it's about the Chavetz Chaim's granddaughter. It's a very powerful story. I've said it before. The Chavetz Chaim's granddaughter was not religious. Partly no fault of her own, because she had traveled to Russia to study in college, and she was trapped behind the Iron Curtain. And Rav Pinkus's daughter told a story from her father that the Chavetz Chaim's granddaughter arrived in Israel, an elderly woman, and she lived on a secular kibbutz with many of the olim from Russia. Rav Pinkus was quite a holy chevreman, and Rav Pinkus found out about it, that there was a grandchild of the Chavetz Chaim was alive, and he went with Rav Zaks to visit her. At first, the woman denied. She pushed him off. You could imagine, this is a complicated situation. Someone who was zocha to be by one of the holiest mans in the last 100 years, but herself, she had become a scientist or a professor in Russia. And finally, she said, okay, I know you view my grandfather in a very, very saintly light. I'll tell you one fascinating story that is connected to me on the condition that you leave me alone after the story. So this is a story she told. She said, when I left Radin, I lived by my parents, next to my grandparents. I wanted to study in university. There was no opportunity like that in Lithuania. And I traveled to St. Petersburg at about age 16, 17, 18 or so. And I was there for a year and a half or 2 years studying. I had a good experience, a positive experience. College in those days, they actually learned something. It wasn't a party place. And she studied for a couple of years. And then she missed her family. She wanted to go back. So here she gets very dramatic. She says, you have to understand what it was like leaving St. Petersburg to go back to Radin. What happened was, in St. Petersburg already, there were already beautiful buildings, there were beautiful railroads. This is the height of Russian education and intelligentsia. And it was a beautiful city. She said, I began to travel back, getting closer to where my grandparents and my father lived, and things began to change. The landscape began to change. The trains from these powerful, beautiful locomotives began to be a little bit run down. And eventually, the trains entirely stopped, and there was only horse and buggy. Eventually, the electricity stopped. Eventually, there was no longer any running water. Getting closer and closer to the home of my parents and my grandfather. I came into Radin, it was late at night. It was dark, there was no electricity. And I come to the house of my saintly grandfather. Almost all the houses are already pitch black. The Holy Chofetz Chaim is still sitting and learning. And he's learning by candlelight. You can see the candlelight through the window. And I rushed into my grandfather's house with a tremendous amount of love and questioning at the same time. And I said to him, Grandfather, hello, I'm back. I came back to visit. And the Chofetz Chaim received me with tremendous joy. And I didn't allow the Chofetz Chaim to enjoy the moment too much. Immediately, I threw out my questions to him. I said to him, Grandfather, how long will it be that you sit by this candle next to these old books, while there's a beautiful and fascinating world out there? Do you know that where I come from, that there are trains and that there are skyscrapers, and you're sitting here without electricity, without any running water, and still by a candle with those old books? The legend is that the Chofetz Chaim said back to Tochter Echveis, I know. And he said that in 50 years from now, they're going to send a man to the moon. That's what the Chofetz Chaim, the granddaughter, supposedly said. They're going to send a man to the moon. Kamat 50 years later. They're going to send a man to the moon. But, and here's the punchline. I must say it in Yiddish first. Dortin, they learn in via zoidig Weltgate. There, they learn how the world goes. Aber da in Radin, by dem ner, here in Radin, by this candle, mirmachin mention. We make people. There's a lot of information, but the goal of this candle, the goal of these old books, is sumachin mention. Meiri Rabbi Rav Nevensal points out that when it comes to the miracle of Hanukkah, the celebration for Hanukkah, what we celebrate is interesting. The Yevanim defiled the menorah and the oil. And what type of menorah did the Chashmonaim light with? God made no miracle about vis-a-vis the menorah. It was a wooden menorah. The miracle was only on the oil. Rav Nevensal points out there are halachic nafkaminas. According to Rambam, you can't have kafta v'ferach on a menorah that's not of zav. So why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do everything? He made the oil last as long as it needed to last. What about a miracle with the menorah? Rav Nevensal explained, it's well known, the Svar Makdoshim write, that Yavan is all about superficiality. Yavan, its letters are Yud, Vav, Nam, they're all straight. What we celebrate on Hanukkah is the Yom Tov of Pnimius. In fact, Hanukkah has no outer expression. It's all the internal expression of Hoda'ah. And we struggle constantly in a world that emphasizes superficiality as opposed to something that's deeper. Is our study and our pursuit of knowledge about gaining more information, or is about in Radin Machimir mention, and we are b'siyata d'shmaya, an extension of those yeshivas in Europe. And our goal is not simply to know about how to be a better Jew, but how what Torah is about is transforming our entire Ramachei Varim and Shesagidim. And that's the answer to the question. The answer to the question of why the tradition in the yeshivas is to emphasize Amelus B'Torah, as we're going to explain B'siyata D'shmaya, to take it apart in three different ways. Our goal is not simply about becoming more literate Jews. Our goal is to become Dovek to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to transform ourselves entirely. Another important story. Tonight's a story night. I heard this story twice. I've said this as well before. I apologize for those who have heard it from me. And in both times, the punchline engendered a deep expression of emotion. I heard this first from my Rebbe in 8th grade in Tarek Tamimah, Rav Lippe Geldworth, and again from my Rebbe in Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, one of my great Rebbeim, Rav Braunschweigel. And Rav Lippe Geldworth heard this story from Rav Kirzner Zatzal. Rav Kirzner Zatzal was already paralyzed, and when he got to the punchline of the story, tears began to come by down his face. And when my Rebbe said the story in the classroom, in the yeshiva, he also began to cry. The story goes that Rabbi Yisrael Charif was looking for a son-in-law for his daughter. He came to the yeshiva of Elazhin, and he began to look for boys who were worthy, what he thought were worthy of his daughter. One of the important factors was that they be serious B'nai Torah and Talmidei Chachamim. And he wasn't impressed. He wasn't impressed even in the yeshiva of Elazhin, the greatest of all yeshivas the last 350, 400 years. The word got out that Rabbi Yisrael Charif wasn't just there stam to come say a couple of shiurim, and he had asked a strong question, and he was looking for a boy who would approach the question properly. One didn't remember, there was another gemara against what he was saying. The other one, his pshat didn't fit in the words. And Rabbi Yisrael Charif was about to go back, travel back, and he got into his horse and buggy, and there was a bachur that ran out. His name was Rabbi Yosef Schlupper. I saw a picture of him many years later, and he was the Rav of where Rabbi Yisrael Charif had been previously the Rav. Rav Braunschweigel told us that, Rav Geldworth told us the name of the bachur. Rabbi Yosef Schlupper. Rabbi Yosef Schlupper ran out of the Beis Medrash and he said to him in Yiddish, Rebbe, vergesst von der Kasha, forget about the question. Aber wie azoi kennst du gehen weg von Velozhin mit der Kasha an der Teretz? But how could you leave Velozhin with a Kasha without a Teretz? And as the fairy tale goes, but this is a true story, he looked at the boy and he said, you're the boy I'm looking for. Ultimately, he married his daughter, and ultimately, he took the position of Rabbi Yisrael Charif years later. When my Rebbe said those words, V'yazoi kens dergen avek from V'lozhin mit akasha and ateretz, how can you leave V'lozhin mit akasha and ateretz? He began to cry, because that was the essence of what V'lozhin was, and that was the essence of who my Rebbe is, and that's the essence of what our pursuit of Iyun is all about. We're not looking simply for Jewish literacy. We're looking for a learning that is going to transform us. How? How does learning transform us? B'siyata d'shmaya, three particular ways. We live in a world today where everything goes. You could be whatever you want to be. You could decide, supposedly, whether you want to be a man or a woman. There is absolutely, by the way, that's added material. It's not from material from 5 years ago. It's not about It's not about any objective truth. Anything goes. I remember I was so struck 15 years ago when I came back, right after 17 years ago, when I came back from Eretz Yisrael to visit for the first time in New York. I was driving down the FDR and there was this massive billboard, one of the few billboards you could actually look at, they're mutter to look at in New York. And there's a big sign of a yellow Nissan car and it says, "Be a saint, be a sinner, just be." Now, how that gets a person to buy a yellow Nissan car, sports car, I'm not sure. But that was the message already 17 years ago. Be a saint, be a sinner, just be. Be whatever you want to be. Because outside, the world is entirely lost and there is absolutely no objective truth. Is there an objective truth if you're just reading information? You're reading what this rabbi said or this rabbi said. Or is it about a search where ultimately every single holy word from HaKadosh Baruch Hu proclaims that we believe that everything in life has an objective right and objective wrong? Talmud Torah is our proclamation to the universe that we believe that there's something objective. That we believe that there's an emistic pshat. And that's what's going on when one chavrusa is screaming at another saying, "No, your pshat is wrong." Your rabbeim are waiting for you to fight with them about what's the emes in the pshat. That's what Amelus B'Torah is all about. It's not just Jewish literacy. Number two, Amelus B'Torah encompasses our whole being. It's not about coming in, reading information, and putting it back on the piece of paper, like some of us did in college. Amelus B'Torah is something else. Another story. Rav Shach, when he was in his 70s, was already weak. He lived many years more. But the doctor said that Rav Shach had to get more sleep. But the Rebbetzin knew that what would happen would be that the doctor would say he has to be in bed at 10, you get up at 6, elderly people tend to get up earlier, but he needs a nice amount of sleep at night. One of the busiest men in the world. Rav Shach used to have prime ministers call him, and he wouldn't answer the phone if it was Shir day. He couldn't. He couldn't talk to the prime minister if he was still working out the sugya. Rav Shach needed to rest. He needed the koach. A lot of the Torah world was on his shoulders. The Rebbetzin was still alive. The doctor says 10 o'clock. She tells Rav Shach that he has to stop tonight. He has to go to sleep. She wakes up in the middle of the night and Rav Shach is not in bed. Sure enough, Rav Shach got up. He was bothered by something in the sugya. She found him by the dining room table. So what'd she do the next night? The next night she decided she's going to go to the master switch for the electricity at the electric box, and she's going to turn off all of the electricity in the entire house when she goes to sleep. So when he gets up, it's going to be entirely dark. Rav Shach, sure enough, gets up. It's entirely dark. The Rebbetzin gets up an hour or two later. Rav Shach is not in bed. She looks at poor Rebbetzin. Now she herself has to search her way through the dark to get to the master switch. She turns on the light. Rav Shach is missing. He's not in the house. What happened? So this was well known already in Panovich before, that Rav Shach, when he would need a sefer, he used to come into the Beis Medrash even very late at night. The advantages of not having everything on the computer. He used to come into the Beis Medrash at night. He used to put his frock over his pajamas. It was a scene that Rav Shach coming in, that, you know, we sing on Pesach, Paro b'pajama b'emtza alayla. In Panovich, they used to have an expression. Rav Shach would put his frock over his pajamas. Rav Shach b'pajama b'emtza alayla. So Rav Shach would come running in. So Rav Shach was already experienced with this, so he went. He went to the Beis Medrash to learn. So the third night, Rebbetzin decided that she's going to put out the lights, and she's going to have a bachur lock the door from the outside. So Rav Shach is going to be trapped in the apartment. He's going to have to go to sleep. She wakes up in the middle of the night, he's not in bed. She checks the door is locked. She's searching around with the flashlight. Where's Rav Shach? Rav Shach is standing in the laundry room on a chair, leaning by the boiler, leaning up by the light, the LED light, and that's how he's learning. Amelus b'teira transforms us, that our entire amach evarim and shesagidin are taken over with a pursuit and a desire to understand Dvar Hashem. There's more, but now I'll just give one last, probably the most important. Amelus b'Torah, as opposed to simply reading information, creating Jewish literacy, is a Gemara on Daf Chav Beis on the Beis in Brachos. The Gemara describes that when a person learns, he's supposed to learn Kinesinaso b'Sinai, as if Torah was given at Har Sinai. Be'ema b'Reses u'b'Zeya. I love the yeshiva that I was zochet to learn in a few fantastic yeshivas, but the one that I spent the most time is our yeshiva, Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. But there were times that I felt that we compromised it. I remember my first or second year in YU, that there were guys that were studying for a Gemara final. I never heard of a Gemara final in Tarvadas. There's no such thing as a Gemara final. And the guy was quoting, we were sitting in the lounge, in Morg Lounge, and he was quoting an Or Zerua. I had never heard Or Zerua, except I used to sing for the Rosh Yeshivas in Tarvadas, Or Zerua Latzadik Yishra Yosef. I never heard of the Or Zerua. And he was quoting an Or Zerua in between episodes, or during commercials, during sitcoms, with his legs on a chair. Now, Baruch Hashem, maybe he wasn't watching the commercials. Levi Yitzchak would be down the kashrus. That's amazing. That even when watching sitcoms, that they're still learning Torah during the commercials. But it's a violation of Kinesinaso b'Sinai. If a person is consumed, he's bothered. Why did the Rambam say it? Why did Ravina Ravashi say it this way? What exactly changed between the Havamin and the Maskana? Doesn't have to be Reb Chaim. It could be in a Gemara itself. To work hard to understand what happened in the Havamina, what happened in the Maskana. Then a person's consumed. Kinesinaso b'Sinai can't be done in between sitcoms. Reb Moshe Weinberger described that his father, when he first arrived in the United States, was stunned. He was stunned. He told him, I couldn't believe when I walked into a Beis Medrash that the Bate Midrashim in Borough Park, Williamsburg, this is when, before Joe Satmar was in Williamsburg, where all the Jews were in Williamsburg, that the Bate Midrashim lurked like a Reformed temple. How do they look like a Reformed temple? Because they have backs on the benches. People sit on benches that have backs. In Europe, no one sat back. No one sat back when they learned. My Rebbe used to say, Rebbe Branchville used to say, that he doesn't understand how we learn drinking a Coke. So I don't think that applies to your generation. Coke is a way you stay up. In fact, you could even respond to my Rebbe by saying that there was once a Rebbe that came over to a boy, a Hasidish Rebbe came over to a boy, and he said to him, Azoi learned min a Gemara mit a Kola. That's how you learn a Gemara with a Kola. So the boy said very well back to him. He said to him, Nein Rebbe, Azoi drink min a Kola mit a Gemara. No Rebbe, we drink a Kola with a Gemara. But the point that it bothered my Rebbe, that he couldn't imagine how someone could sit and be Amel the Torah Kinesinaso b'Sinai. That Kinesinaso b'Sinai is only engendered if a person spends some time that he's not just imbibing information. He is trying to understand a pasuk, which was then expressed in a Mishnah, which was then expressed in a Gemara. Rav Shechter so beautifully starts over with Shiurim. It's a pasuk. It starts with a pasuk. And then the Amorayim were cholik. And then and before long, you get to Reb Chaim. And then you're there. As Rav Soloveitchik describes, the Rambam and Ravid come through. It all starts with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam and Ravid could only be next to you if you started first with the pasuk from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kinesinaso b'Sinai. It's no longer about Jewish literacy. It's an encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I beg of both the Kollel fellows and the Bachurim to remember that. That our learning for the Smicha guys, our learning is not just simply about taking the tests and knowing the material, but to really, really, really feel it's Kinesinaso b'Sinai. And I turned to the boys in Torah Shraga who are learning so beautifully during this challenge. It's amazing. Last year I teased Rav Roblowski. I said to him, I don't know what you put into those cakes. Maybe some drugs or something. But this year I figured it out. You know what's in those cakes? A lot of love. That's what's in those cakes. But with Rabosai, it's only the first step. It's only the first step of learning the Gemara. But wait a second, to go back. And it doesn't matter if you're not going to check off that next daf. Wait a second, there was something here in the Gemara that wasn't entirely clear. Let me work on it. Let me go over to a Rebbe. Let me approach him. Torah is not about checking off boxes. Torah is about being part of that Shalshelas HaMesorah, which is an encounter with Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that is why we learn Be'iyun. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us the Siyata D'Shmaya. That we should be able to proclaim to the world that our Talmud Torah is entirely different than anything else in the world. It's a proclamation to the world that it's a pursuit of truth and that there is an objective truth. That our Melus B'Torah should not be something that we just check off, but it's an experience of our Ramach Evarim and Shesag Eden. And finally, to feel Kodesh Baruch Hu from the Pasuk all the way down to you. And with that, you will become one of the Shalshelas HaMesorah. Kodesh Baruch Hu should give us the Siyata Shemayim to be Kadesh Shem Shemayim in our Talmud Torah. Thank you.